Hello everyone, this is Nick Smart here from the Herald Sun, and I'm joined today by gun reporter Michael Warner. How are you, Mike?
Hello, Smarty. We're almost there, the longest season in the history of the Nakatomi Corporation.
We certainly are, and I guess we'll kick things off with the fixture release. Michael, anything particularly jump out to you? There's obviously a lot of Thursday night games. There's talk about the potential for a footy frenzy. What did you make of the fixture release?
Well, look, the first thing I think is that last year, even though this year, the 2020 season, even though it was an incredible season in terms of, you know, COVID, the 17 rounds or the 18 rounds was pretty pure, wasn't it? Everyone got to play everyone once and you couldn't complain. And the 22, you know, the random five extra games, it's the first thing you look for, isn't it, as a supporter? Who are we playing twice? And they do weight it these days, depending on ladder position. So as a person with a affiliation, would you say, for the Tigers, I had a look, and the double ups there are quite difficult. And, you know, they're playing a lot of the top four teams twice. So I don't really like that aspect of it. But as we know, for the TV money, they need the 22 rounds. What was your view as a Collingwood man of the Pies fixture?
No, I don't mind it, mate. But I must admit, I look at it as a draw is a draw, and if you're good enough, then that's it. You know, it shouldn't matter. But I'm sort of interested though in what you were saying, then, Michael, about the fixture in terms of the 17 rounds last year. Would you be a fan of going to a 17 round fixture and cutting out those extra games rather than having this where, as I said, a couple of clubs play every club twice? What's your view on that? Do you like the 17 rounds that we saw last year?
Absolutely. I'd love the purity of it. If we do get two extra teams, which is always in the discussion, you know, whether it's Tasmania, Peter Gordon was suggesting we could have another team at Adelaide or Perth. So if you had 20 teams, I think everyone playing everyone once, maybe, I don't know why I'm going to say this, but with a wild card finals weekend or something to appease the TV broadcast, to stretch it out, whether it's State of Origin, doesn't appear to be a real appetite for that. But just to keep using that word, but the purity of the integrity of playing everyone once and then the following year you would play that team, you know, at their home ground. So if it was at West Coast, you'd play them at West Coast one year and back in Melbourne or wherever you're from the following. I think that would be the optimum model, but until we get more teams, and certainly with the money being as tight as it is at the moment, we're not looking at new teams, although we could get to Tasmania later. I don't think it'll ever happen, but it's a pipe dream. But to answer your question, absolutely, I'd love to see it.
What about the footy frenzy, Nick? Because with the footy frenzy, they're saying that, look, it's not going to happen next year unless, obviously, COVID blows up again, and then they have the option to compress the season again. But I guess what was surprising out of the 2020 season was the fact that a lot of fans liked it, and more particularly interesting is that players actually didn't mind it as well. Would you like to see that again?
No, you can't judge anything on what happened in a year where we're all locked up as prisoners in our own homes and we got nothing but to watch the TV at night. And, you know, I watched every game in the footy frenzies as well. But when we get back to normal life, you know, you're asking too much of families, of supporters. I love a football. I'm not even a huge fan of Thursday nights, but I think I've lost that argument. I can tolerate Thursday nights, Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. Love the idea of the round being wrapped up on the Sunday night. So on the Monday, we can analyse. The news comes out. We've got our, you know, TV shows we all love on a Monday night. And then the week rolls on through, you know, controversy or selection. To me, that's the model that's worked for 150 years, given we didn't play on Friday nights, but you get my point. And I think we've got to be careful of going down the Major League Baseball route of there's game on. We had stages, Smarty, this year. I didn't even know where the games were being played. But, you know, you turned it on, it was North Melbourne, Brisbane, and it was in Perth or something. You know, it was crazy. But so, no, again to answer your question, but you know, the TV dollar ultimately decides the day. And that, again, you were at the press conference yesterday with Travis Old, and they mentioned the grand final, which I just wish they would have a, the commission would have the guts to permanently enshrine a day grand final so we can get rid of the most boring conversation in history. It's a bit like, should we play football on Good Friday? We had that conversation every year. It drove me nuts. Yep. And then when we got it, it was pretty dull anyway, wasn't it? So the night grand final to me has to be at 2:30 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon for another 1,000 years. But again, it's the almighty TV dollar that will have its final say.
What's your prediction then, Mick? I agree. I feel like there's a lot of public sentiment that people obviously still want the game at night. But what's your prediction for 2021? Do you think the AFL will cave, I guess, and keep it at night now that they've let the genie out of the bottle, or do you think we'll revert to the traditional time slot?
Well, I have no faith that the AFL will do what the fans want, and that's poll after poll, 70, 80, 90% saying, I mean, they don't even want twilight, let alone a night grand final. But we got a night grand final this year. It was fine. It was good. It was a good night and a good spectacle. But the day grand final's about more than the game. It's about the families, kids, barbecues. If you're lucky enough to get a ticket, you know, you go to the breakfast. You don't want the game finishing at 11 o'clock and then the shenanigans kicking on. You know, we don't want 20,000 people in Swan Street, Smarty, this next year at 4 a.m. because that's where they'll be. I don't think that we'll get a day grand final because the commission has shown it's a law unto itself and doesn't really care what the supporters think. Because if they did and they looked at those polls, they would never change it.
A long day, wasn't it, waiting for the night granny, especially particularly the Richmond man, you would have felt that this year?
Yeah, exactly. That day just didn't work, and then you had the ridiculous public holiday the day before. We don't need that either.
No,
to be honest.
No, that's right.
We'll see what they do, but there's a hell of a lot that the AFL have got on their plate before they get to the night grand final. And you know, this review that the clubs are pushing for hasn't got a lot of oxygen, but it's a very real thing. And it just shows that there's a lot of angst in the clubs. Don't forget, it's the clubs who ultimately own the competition. They're the primary shareholders. The commission serves at the pleasure of the clubs. That's something that we've forgotten over a long period of time. So a lot of those things to do with cash distributions, equalisation, they're going to be some big issues that come to a head next year. We got through the year together this year, and in the end, the finances were nowhere near as bad as they were predicted. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens next year in the political sense.
Mick, obviously there's been a couple of out-of-season indiscretions. We've seen Tyson Stengel, and this week we've seen Sydney Stack. Do you think it's fair for Stack to be spending Christmas in jail for a COVID breach?
Well, do you know of any other COVID breaches who have been in prison for 2 weeks?
I don't.
I mean, mate, is it because it's a second offence, which the first offence was hardly, I mean, the Queensland was open. It was just an AFL breach, wasn't it? So
Yeah, it was.
Look, I hope that Richmond stick by Sydney Stack. This is not the first time he's got himself into trouble. I spoke with Peter Sumich, who coached him in the West Australian under-18s a few years back, who really rates him. Not only is a player, he says he's as hard a player as he's seen with skills, but he says he is a good kid. He's not a liar. He doesn't cheat.
Yeah.
He just makes mistakes. We all do. What were you doing, Smarty, when you were 20, running right wherever you were?
Well, I was on the Gold Coast, so you can probably answer that yourself.
Stacky found trouble in the Gold Coast. Look, it's unfortunate you're going to get these incidents in the off season, but they're only kids, and he'd been at a funeral, and I think he should be let out of prison and he should be back at training in Richmond in January. But he's on his last warning. But Richmond, yeah, I don't think was back.
There's not much wiggle room now for him, is there? But there are a couple of slip-ups for Richmond now, Mick. Obviously, Dusty lunching with Eddie Haston, a well-known Sydney identity. Is the Tigers' empire crumbling just a tad?
There are some signs. There are some signs that I've noticed in the Herald Sun have been running a series in the last few days. Be interested in your take on the four dynasty teams that we've seen in the last 25 years or 20 years, starting with Brisbane Lions, who I just loved watching Brisbane Lions on a Sunday afternoon. Yeah. They were just so star-studded. Then you had the Geelong team, which knocked off your boys in a premiership, one of their three, Hawthorn, and then 11. The Tigers. It's a bit... hard to comp. Do you think Richmond belong in that conversation?
I do. And if they, geez, if they win again next year in a non-compressed season, geez, they are well and truly in the conversation. If not at the top, I personally would still go for the Brisbane team. I grew up in Queensland. I was at the Gabba most weeks during that time, and they were just an unbelievable machine. That team, very unlucky not to win four. Probably only denied four by the obviously well documented preliminary final at the MCG, which was a shocking call. But I'd still go with the Lions. But if Richmond can win again next year, they are well and truly in the conversation.
Yeah, I'd go with the Lions just ahead of Geelong. Hawthorn were clinical, weren't they? It was a system that short kicking, but they did have Buddy in the first couple, who's probably my favourite ever player. Geelong, I had a look. I reckon they had 11 genuine superstars in the one team. Brisbane maybe 9 or 10, and Richmond are a bit more even, but they do have Dusty and some underrated guys like Titch Edwards, who I think history will declare him a better player. But anyway, it's nice to be talking dynasties after 37 years of Scheisenhausen. Yeah.
Mick, is it amazing to think that Mason Cox has denied you four premierships in a row?
I think it was more of a corky to the number four and a bit of flu that went through the joint. How'd it go the following week for Collingwood?
No, come on now. That's not nice.
I did hear Dom Sheed say that he hasn't had to buy a beer since in Perth. And... Dom, if you're ever in Victoria, I'd like to buy you one as well.
Well, speaking of the Pies, Nick, I want to ask you about Eduardo, mate, Eddie Maguire, stepping down at the end of 21. Who is the next Magpie president as we sit here?
It's a very difficult question. Old Ed, he surprised people by calling time. I felt he read... He sniffed the breeze and he didn't like the smell of it. And I think he probably got a tap on the shoulder from people close to him. He did, as far as we can tell, surprise. Didn't tell many people that he was going to pull the pin. But he's given himself that 12-month buffer. And, if they were to win the premiership, he might do a Malthouse and see if he can reverse the decision. But... answer your question. Craig Kelly's always the obvious one for me, the player agent head of TLA, but he's also Nathan Buckley's manager and he's also the biggest player agent in the game. And so he'd have to divest himself of those interests and he can't really divest himself of his close relationship with that Nathan Buckley anyway, can he? So I think we can put a line through him. John Brumby would have been outstanding, former premier, but he said that he's unavailable with other commitments. Paul Tudnam had been mentioned, the property developer, son of Des. He's also out. So I don't know whether they go for Mark Corder, who has the support of one of the Galbalies, who, of course, David Galbally and his brother Francis really went public calling for Maguire to step aside. So there's a guy in Sydney who runs Disney Music that's been mentioned. His name escapes me. David Rosen, I think it is.
Yeah.
Who would you like, Smarty?
I'm quite. I'm quite torn, Mick, because I'm not sure whether they need somewhat a high profile president, because we've had that for 23 years. And do you need the opposite, or do you need someone still relatively high profile, given the fact that their CEO, Mark Anderson, is quite a behind the scenes kind of operator, not exactly well known publicly? Do you think they need someone that's high profile, or do you think they need to scale it back in that regard?
I just think that a president needs to do their primary job is governance. It's not having a loud voice. And, you know, Eddie got himself into a lot of trouble a lot of the times, but he's got a lot of friends, and he was forgiven for a lot of the things he said. But don't forget, he would also weigh in day after day into club issues.
Yeah.
I like the sort of Peggy O'Neill model, where she's an expert in governance, and she runs a board like any normal business board would do, and leaves that, you know, the posturing and the discussions of some issues to people like the Brendan Gale or Damien Hardwick. But they'll just go for you're lucky that 30% of the community follow Collingwood, and you've got plenty of candidates. But he goes down as a giant of the game, Maguire, that's for sure.
Definitely, he certainly does, Mick. And what do you think it means for Nathan Buckley? He's about to lose his chief backer, particularly in a year in 2021 where it's his last year of his contract. And if Collingwood aren't in rebuilding mode right now, they're very close. They're definitely going back to the draft. Where do you think it leaves Bucks? Because I think it leaves him in a pretty tight spot, personally.
It's a hard one, because I reckon Collingwood were... at the start of the year when you beat the Dogs in round one, I thought you were the premiership favourites. And as I said, you can't judge a lot of things on COVID. Obviously, it was a disaster with the salary cap, losing all those players and the way it was mismanaged, and then the PR catastrophe, which probably cost Ed in the end. But the players that you've lost, I don't think they're going to hurt you as much as you think. And I think you've still got a really good nucleus. Your forward line worries me. I don't think you can rely on Cox.
No.
But you're in the frame. And top four still there. And they did draft really well. So they got kids coming through. But it's guys like Quaynor and blokes who are ready to emerge that is where I think the growth will come from. So Buckley, you know, it's a big year for him. It's a big year for all coaches, really. Apart from Hardwick, he's probably got some runs on the board. But, I think Bucks will find a way. I do. Yeah. I don't think he's going to go into next year.
Yeah, I love Bucks, and I love what he's done. I love who he is. I do think, though, I don't think they make the 8 in 21. And I think they'll slide a bit. And yeah, I'm not sure where that leaves Nathan Buckley for 21, because I think they need to do. They're almost in rebuild mode, and that's a big call. He's been there for almost a decade now at Collingwood. Buckley, are they committed to Buckley, and is Buckley committed to them post 21? I'm not sure.
He is.
It's a big call. They've got a big call to make. So.
Well, I wonder if they reappoint him, Smarty, before quietly reappoint him. Because if you don't reappoint him and you get to round 10 and whatnot, like you're saying, then
yeah,
you know, he is in trouble. So fascinating one.
It's a very fascinating one. And I also want to ask you, Michael, about Geelong. We've got Jeremy Cameron joining them. Is it one of the biggest trades of the past 10 years in terms of what it means to a club, means to a coach? Do you think Jeremy Cameron, in that combination with Tom Hawkins, pushes them over the top?
Well, the first thing to say is that only my mum, when I'm in trouble, calls me Michael. So if we could just revert to Mick, that'd be great. Jeremy Cameron, mate, I love the way Geelong have gone all in. There's a cliff surely coming one day for Geelong, but then it's never come. They've been 20 years almost at the top. Sydney did it for so long, made the finals 20 out of 21 years or something astonishing. Geelong are going to do it again next year. Smith, Higgins, Cameron, they're great ins. And they've lost a few in Gazza, the greatest of all time, arguably. So that, but he was not the player he was. So with their home ground advantage, hungry after what happened. Now, I like, well, to get Jeremy Cameron was incredible. They did pay a bit for him, but don't forget, they got a hell of a lot back for Tim Kelly the year before. So they're in a good spot. They're in a very good spot. What's interesting there, just on that, their two club doctors have left the club.
Yeah, they have. And they have.
It's part of this cost-cutting stuff I'm talking about before. That's going to be a big issue. If players are losing their physios and their medical departments are being decimated. What's your primary asset, Smarty, as a footy club? It's the health of your players.
It is,
I can't believe that we're sort of cutting costs in that crucial area.
Yeah,
same with mental health.
Really, definitely. It's one that could really have an impact on Geelong, potentially. And we know, too, that Joe Danaher, one of the reasons he went to Brisbane was what he'd heard about the medical department up there had done wonders with a few other players. So I don't think it's an area you can underestimate.
No, I think the next movie of Cocoon will be shot down at Geelong with enough old people down there to be able to film that.
Definitely. I guess in Geelong's favour too, Nick, is that they've got 9 games down at Cadinia, 6 at the MCG. They leave the state just 5 times, including the clash in Hobart against the Roos. I mean, they're arguably the big winners of the fixture as well, which certainly helped their chances.
It's like saying they're the big winners of the draft. It means nothing. Remember Alistair Clark? I love Clarko's old line that some teams win the premiership in November at the draft and others win it in September.
Yeah, it's like a very fair point. It's true. What about, I want to ask about Carlton and Essendon as well. Mick, it's a great year of hope debate for both clubs. There's a lot of hype surrounding Carlton. Do you think they're the big improvers in 21 with obviously Williams and Saad coming in? They're probably going to be a big story either way, aren't they? If they get a wiggle on, they're a big story. And if they slide, they're obviously an even bigger story, arguably.
Well, I just love but it's fascinating to me the way that big, giant, powerful clubs, when you and I were kids, Carlton and Essendon, they were a club CEO said to me the other day when he entered the competition, Essendon was like Manchester United of the AFL.
Yeah.
Big, powerful. Never an issue would go past or a commission meeting where they didn't throw their weight around. And they were easily the biggest club, in terms of sponsorships and whatnot. They lost their way. Long before the drug saga, mind you. They haven't won a final, I think, since 2004. Is it? And Carlton, again, with Elliott, they were just this big, brash, arrogant club that won premiership after premiership. And they haven't done it since 95. And they get into this death spiral, which Richmond was in for 37 years. Collingwood, you'd have to say, under your mate Eddie, they were always thereabouts getting into the grand final. So, getting Bombers and Blues, they're trying to find a way, but I'm not convinced of either model at the moment, I've got to say. They've recruited well, Carlton, but the Curnow knee's a concern. Saad and Williams will add a little bit of drive, but you couldn't say with any confidence, could you, that Carlton is going to explode into the top 6 next year?
You wouldn't say so. The anger for supporters, the Blue supporters, if they don't make the 8 in 2021, patience is very thin, wearing thin, and be even thinner if they can't get over the line in 21 to play in finals.
And the same with the Bombers.
They're in for a rebuild, though, the Bombers.
Well, not when you look at their when you watch the draft, and I saw those 3 picks, 6, 7, 8, or whatever they had, they all look absolutely brilliant prospects. I've got to say, the two really tall, skilled blokes, and then the gun midfielder whose name escapes me, but Yeah, look, Josh Marnie's their new footy boss. Yeah. Marnie, they sacked Dan Richardson.
Yeah.
Because they were looking, if you go back and look at what they said at the time, I think they wanted a football boss who'd coached. They went for Brad Scott. They didn't get him. They ended up with Josh Marnie, who'd been moved sideways at Melbourne. I was fascinated by the review that Essendon chairman Paul Brasher, who seems like a pretty switched on guy, the findings of the review intrigued me, that the players were saying they wanted to be basically ridden harder, and Worsfold had a philosophy, if you've got to the AFL, you don't need me to motivate you, but not sure that worked. So they're going to go the other way and really have a bit more of a harsher environment, which is what they're saying the players want. Just one last one on Essendon. There is the last ever ember of the Essendon drug saga. There's an AAT, Administrative Appeals Tribunal, hearing in Brisbane in February. Nathan Lovett Murray and his lawyers are having one last throw at the stumps. Keep an eye on that one. Just when thought it was safe to go back into the water slide.
Wow. Just when you thought it was all over. Well, just one more Essendon, Mick. I want to ask you about Zach Merritt quickly. Do you stretch your free agency out until the season's ended to Zach Merritt, or do you get in early and commit? Because I personally feel that they're well and truly into rebuild mode. I don't see any success for them in the short term. So what do you do with Zach Merritt?
I think you have a really close look at how it plays out, don't you? But you know, Zach Merritt as well, if I'm Essendon, he's a good player, but he's an accumulator. He hasn't really hurt you by foot. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh on him, but I'm not sure that you're going to sell the farm to keep him either. You know, it's a bit of a two-way thing there. If he's going to demand ridiculous money or get himself into a bit of a bidding war, I don't know. I mean, he may well go. And if he does, I don't think it'll be the end of the world.
All right, Mick. Well, we might leave it there. Thank you for your time and Merry Christmas.
Yeah, heading back to the Gold Coast.
We're trying to sneak up just before Christmas. Still hopeful. But after the year we've had, nothing is locked in stone, is it? So that's what we're hoping for.
Let's just hope that the caravan doesn't have to go back to Gold Coast next year and we go through it all again. And stay safe, everyone. We'll see you in 2021.